Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kurt Badenhausen, a great guest from Forbes, senior editor on the value of franchises. Blair Thomas, former Nittany Lion great, will be here tomorrow night. Bobblehead, his first ever bobblehead. State College Spikes. And Blair will be in the house tomorrow. We'll talk to him in a few moments. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. The Yankees won 10-7 last night. D.D. Gregorius, a big two-run triple with John Sterling on the call on WFAN.
0-1. Swung on and lined toward the gap in left center field. A long run for Cave. Can't get there. A base hit going all the way to the wall. Judge scores. Here comes Hicks. He scores. D.D. to third with a triple. Now, that's the one thing he didn't have last night, a triple. Shame on him. So he triples to deep left center. That's where Hicks made that phenomenal catch. He gets two RBIs as Judge and Hicks score, and the Yankees take a 9-3 lead.
And by the way, isn't it great to hear John Sterling back? That's great. Great to hear him back on the air. Hey, before we get to Blair Thomas, I think there have been a couple people that have asked me about this. I believe that most people are aware that for only the fourth time in 70 years, Cape Cod was hit by a tornado. In fact, they were hit by two on Tuesday. We weren't on the air yesterday. So I've had a lot of people ask me, how close was it to where you stayed? Well, last Wednesday night, so 8 days ago, we did a baby shower for my son-in-law, for my son and my daughter-in-law. And the idea was, I said, I'm going to take the entire family out. And there's a place when we go out as a family, there's a couple places we like to go. One of them is this place called Yarmouth House. Well, Yarmouth House, for those who have seen the Cape Sands Inn where the roof blew off, is two blocks. The Cape Sands Inn is two blocks from Yarmouth House. Okay. Then if you see the at Bass River, when they show the water spout and the tornado going across Bass River, in the background's the golf course that Dan and I played on Thursday. So yes, it hit very close to where we vacation. Very close. Obviously all of us, we've been exchanging text messages the last few days. All of us feel fortunate we went the week we did. And the important part is it sounds like nobody got hurt. And I guess by tonight they'll have all the power back. 4% of the homes in Chatham still without, 4% in Harwich without power, 3% in Chatham. Yarmouth and Dennis are both down to 1% without power. So yes, for those who have asked about, and there have been many that have asked me, how close is that to where you stay? That's really close. All right. Blair Thomas, one of my all-time favorites. When he left here, he was the second leading rusher in the history of the program. All right. Blair, welcome. It is always great to hear you on the other end.
Everything is going well, Steve. How's everything with yourself?
Doing very well, and I can't wait to see you Friday night. I want to get into a couple parts with your career. You end up coming here. You're out of Philadelphia. You played in the 86 team, but you're behind DJ, despite the fact you ran 92 yards against Syracuse and the official didn't have a sense for the dramatic and let you score.
That's at home.
At home, no less. What kind of patience did it take for you to be behind DJ, even though you were giving your spots here and there?
Actually, for me, I looked at it as an opportunity for me to learn from a more seasoned back, because a lot of people don't know I didn't play football until ninth grade with equipment on. So right. I didn't have those those youth league years of experience. So I was still actually learning the game of football while I was, you know, really behind DJ.
Could you relate with Miles Sanders in some ways, who waited behind and learned from Saquon Barkley?
Yes. Yes, he was in that same situation. You know, I don't know if he approached it the same way, but it was not a problem for me. A lot of guys nowadays, they want to come in and play as a true freshman, where my situation of how my career went as a youth coming up, I didn't have that opportunity, so I looked at it as a time for me to learn.
Steve Wisniewski is eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame again this year. He's on the ballot. I go back to the game with Notre Dame on that incredibly cold day, and you gained, I want to say you gained 221 in that game. At least I know I'm in the neighborhood.
Yes, you are.
Okay, 221. And you followed him all day. As a guy who ran behind Steve Wisniewski, what would you tell a College Football Hall of Fame voter about him?
Well, he was a excellent teammate, and the fact that he was a student of the game, his family was, played football as well. So football was in his blood, and he came in. He was a college lineman that understood, and on the field, he was able to hit that switch that will change his mentality from, Clark Kent, the mild-mannered guy, to, a football player that's skilled at his position. So he needs to be into the College Hall of Fame. He should have already been in there before, from what I know of him and seeing him play even in the NFL.
After you got hurt, and if I remember, it was a pre-Citrus Bowl practice. I want to say it was inside Halubi when you got hurt. You had to sit out the 88 season. What did it take for you to get back for 89, and how gratifying was the finish in the Holiday Bowl for you?
I took that injury pretty much kind of, you can't say with a grain of salt, but I stayed with the players that whole 88 season, every practice, weight room, so I kept myself involved and with the team because that's the atmosphere that we had, is that we were there all together, and that's what that team prior to that season when we won the national championship, for those guys to come back for their fifth year in some cases, and do it for the team, it was just a amazing thing. And that's the thing that I look at, is though now DJ passed the baton to me, I got to make sure that I, take care of the house. And that's what I look at myself doing. And for me to come back and to not play a single game with a knee brace on,
right,
and to finish as the Holiday Bowl MVP was just been, it was amazing. It gave me a great feeling that, I accomplished what I wanted to do at the collegiate level.
Is that as wild a game as you ever played in?
Oh, yeah, yes, it was. playing against a great quarterback who told us at one of the luncheons that he was going to throw for over 500 yards, and he did. And for Gary Brown to, rip the ball from Ty Detmer and run it back. I mean, the catches in the end zone by, Dave Daniels and Terry Smith, it was just an amazing, amazing night.
Andre Collins ran a two-point conversion back 102 yards for 2 points the other way.
Yeah, I forgot that. I mean, it just seemed like, the one thing that I always told myself in playing is that you had to show up in the big games. You had to show up in the big games.
Right.
And to think back at that game, all the big players that were supposed to show up showed up that night, contributing all over the field, which, was a team effort, and I was just fortunate enough to that I got the MVP.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you run. I want to say you ran for 186 in that game. You're going to get the MVP when you do that, especially when you're logging. Well, you, I think you had like 34, 35 carries in that game.
Yes.
I mean, that's about the greatest usage I think I can remember you having in a game.
Well, that one was similar to the Notre Dame game.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
You know, those are two.
Yeah, they're very similar because, again, it was so cold. Why throw it?
Right.
why bother throwing it?
And that's what I enjoy because I got an opportunity to stay warm by keeping that blood flowing. But when you came off and got on the sideline, those guys were not moving from in front of those blowers because you was in the game staying warm.
How do you view Penn State today, and how do you view the job James Franklin's doing today?
You know, actually, I think he's doing an excellent job. Some guys are getting a little antsy, but I look at it probably differently than a lot of those guys for the mere fact that, you know, winning 9 games at this level in this conference is a great feat. If you try to run him out of town, you're going to bring in a guy that haven't won 9 games yet and haven't taken you to a Big Ten championship, haven't taken you to a Rose Bowl, and you're going to have to pay him more, and he haven't even won 9 games yet. And now let me take your program into a spin, unless you get a similar type of coach who wants to run the same type of offense. Now you may have some struggles in your recruiting by having some guys out of position. You have to wait a couple years before you get that guy that you really want at that key position. So I look at it different. So I think he's doing an excellent job. You know, I'm going to keep on, you know, cheering for him and doing my part to support the program. Because it's an outstanding place to be your collegiate
Well, the first 1,000 fans are going to get a Blair Thomas bobblehead on Friday night, and you'll be there for it. So, one of the easier questions on my part is, how does it feel to have a bobblehead, and do you think it looks like you?
No, I need some more tweaks. Bobbleheads always need tweaks, but that was probably the third rendition of it. I'm happy with it. Even though it's a little,
it's amazing. And you'll also get a chance to come back here. You seem to relish coming back here as often as you can. Is that fair to say?
Yes. I try to get back as much as possible because I had a great collegiate experience there. I want to make sure some of the young players that's going through there understand some of the opportunities that's available to them. And do my best to help support the university as best I can.
How did this come about? Who got in contact with you from the Spikes to do this? And just take us through the process as to how you're going to get to Medley Field, Lebronto Park. How did it happen?
Well, actually, I was in town last year when they were doing that celebrity. They were trying to put together a celebrity softball game that got rained out.
Yep.
That involved a lot of, former players and faculty. And I was in town for that. And Kajana, was also in town. I think he did a bobblehead. So
yep.
I guess it was kind of on those lines. Well, I don't have a bobblehead yet.
Hey.
So I have a bobblehead now, from what I understand.
Well, okay. So, and just so everyone understands, all right, when Blair was done, he was the number two all-time leading rusher in Penn State history behind him. You were number two when you left. So, so people understand where you were when you left. You couldn't gain any more yards.
Right. Unless I'd have got a couple more carries as a freshman and sophomore.
That's exactly right. A couple more. And by the way, your bowl yardage didn't count either.
Right.
So that 186.
Well, if that's the case, their bowl yardage didn't count either.
Yeah. Well, back then, but today it does. So today it does. For anybody who starts looking about where everybody's bowl yardage is right now, Evan Royster's bowl yardage counts. So just,
Didn't know that.
So we'll have to sit down one time, you and me, and we'll go through your 186 and a couple of others along the way and see how you ended up.
Yeah, put some asterisks next to people's stuff.
That's exactly right. Hey, Blair, I can't wait to see you on Friday night. Thanks a lot for the time today. It's always great chatting with you. You know that.
Yes, Steve. Thanks. You know, it's always good to catch up.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
He'll be here again tomorrow night. Medler Field, LeBron will park for his appearance. And sticking with the New York Penn League, Bryson Stott of the Williamsport Crosscutters is going to also be with us on Monday's show. Looking forward to hearing from him. Good-looking prospect, by the way. And over the years, Gabe Sinacropi and the outstanding people at Williamsport have been great. We had Adam Hazley on the show 2 years ago. Now you're seeing him with the Phillies. All right. Final half hour, Ben Jones, statecollege.com will be joining us. And we're looking forward to talking to him about Penn State football. And Ben did not go out to Big Ten Media Day. It's interesting how, as time goes, there's still enough national people that go to this. But, you know, all this stuff is televised. And to be honest with you, you do get more in the side interviews than you do in the actual interviews, the podium interviews, the podium session. You get more on the side than you do it compared to the podium. And that's, it's going to be very, and that's why I think most of the news is actually made in the side session than it is in the podium session. The podium session, you can make a long statement. You got your 15, you got 12 minutes, whatever it is, right? And in the end, you don't have to say as much. You get to the side. And look, at Penn State Football Media Day is going to be the end of next week anyway. And again, all it does is set up the preseason. What it does, it sets the preseason up for you. Because there'll be a certain point midway through where how quickly everything changes. So, in other words, you go through Big Ten Media Day, not much changes between Big Ten Media Day and your team media day. I mean, not much changes. Maybe somebody has a great issue with somebody, whatever. I mean, Penn State's not even done with summer school yet. They won't be done with summer school until the end of the first week. I want to say they're done on the 6th, 7th, 8th. I would say the 8th? No, the 9th. I think the 9th is the last day of summer classes. You know, with finals or whatever it may be. Then they've got 2 weeks where they don't have class, but they have preseason camp. And it's a little bit less than that because there is a day where they can move in. And I want to say move-in day is about, it's a 10-day gap between no class, current status in terms of living arrangement, then move-in day. So 10 days. And they're not on every day. They are, you know, you're not going 7 days a week.
even in the time when you could, you still take a day off. And James is doing what he usually does, and that's giving the team Mondays off. Mondays are the days off for them. And we'll just see what the weather's like next month. I mean, is it going to be like it's been the last few days? Or is it going to be like it was last week, where it was sizzling right away out of the gate? Let's see here. Yeah, it looks to me like they're going to be in the low 80s to start. It's fine. It's no big deal. And you're not doing 2-a-days anymore. No, I mean, everybody's allowed. Nobody's allowed to do 2-a-days. Now, old-time coaches will say that's soft. But you know what? Everybody operates under the same rules. So everybody's doing 1-a-days. I mean, let's face it. You want to go back 50 years when they gave you salt tablets? Really? You got your bell rung and they held up 2 fingers? Hey, not everything in, quote, the old days was good. So let's not romanticize the old days. There are certain parts of, quote, the old days you can romanticize, but there are also a few other things where things have actually progressed to a better stage.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. And our thanks to Blair Thomas for being on the show today. Our thanks as well to Kurt Badenhausen from Forbes joining us today on the value of franchises. And in a few moments, Ben Jones, staycollege.com. So, Sean, the Phillies will play the Braves. This has got to be the start of go time for them. I think that's fair to say, don't you think?
Yeah, Jake Arrieta will be back in the lineup tomorrow night, but you just wonder how durable he's going to remain for the rest of the season, you know, with the bone spurs he's been dealing with in his pitching arm. But roll with it one game at a time. See if they can throw water on that Braves fire that's been going on, top of the NL East, with Acuna's been a terrific, Freddie Freeman consistent as ever.
Yeah. Give the Braves credit. They came up with a game plan as to how to rebuild after their glory years, and they have executed it. Can't say enough about that. All right, let's talk about Penn State football now. This is the calm before the preseason storm. Last week was Big Ten Media Day. Penn State football goes to camp the end of next week. Joining us now is Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Hello, Ben. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve.
You can sit there and you can watch the Big Ten Media Days on TV, and that's a good way to really capture everything along the way. As you watched everybody go through their presentations, did anything stick out to you?
I think the thing that stuck out to me is that the days of the Big Ten Media Day being the only time that anybody gets to talk to a coach during the summer are long gone. It feels like everyone is just waiting. Everyone's had their sit-downs with their coaches and players, and they're just ready for the season to go along. And I think, to a certain extent, if you're the Big Ten, every Big Ten Media Day you can go through without some major bit of bad news is a good Big Ten Media Day to have. It's always my annual reminder that Lovie Smith is in the conference. It's always fun to listen to Jim Harbaugh talk about things. And I think if you're James Franklin, there was not a lot of news to go over, and you go back to State College and prepare for training camp without, really any elephants in the room or any sort of injuries, at least at this point, to deal with. I think the Big Ten Media Days and conference media days in general have lost some of their excitement simply because, you know, there's a lot more availability now than there used to be. But, you know, at the same time, I think if you're any of these coaches, no news is good news.
Right. So let's get to Penn State. Obviously, to me, perception's always really important about a program when the quarterback is returning. Penn State does not have the quarterback returning. Is that part of Penn State's perception at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the perception that people had about Penn State last year, and simply the fact that Trace McSorley was back meant that even though they were losing all of these skill position players that had a lot of experience, that they were going to be okay, because in college football, probably more even than the pros, if you've got a good quarterback, you can be in every game. And the fact that you know, Trace McSorley was back helped that. And I think now you look at Penn State and you go, you know, we've seen Sean Clifford throw the ball. We know he can throw it. It looks nice and everything. But we don't know what Sean Clifford does on third down in Columbus in a close game. We haven't seen that yet. And that changes the perception simply because there's unknown questions. And I think, you know, for all the optimism that you look at Ohio State with Justin Fields, you know, there's some of those same things that you go, you know, that's a guy that's got a lot of potential. But until he does it, you know, nobody really knows. So I do think the perception changes, especially when you're changing quarterbacks, because so much about college football is about stability and continuity year to year. You know, you look at Clemson, you look at Alabama, those are two schools that, you know, have their quarterback situation figured out, and just simply because of that, you know, people have them once again in those favorites to win things. So I think, you know, if you're Penn State, you're Ohio State, you know, you're one of these teams that's changing a quarterback, you might be optimistic about that guy that's coming in, but at the same time, you know, expectations, at least from the outside, are a little different until everybody sees how that guy plays.
Sean Clifford, Will Levis aside for the moment, what will be a couple of areas of Penn State football in the preseason that you want to keep your eye on that would be on your checklist?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen over the years that obviously the offensive line is an area that, you know, if you can shore that up and give Sean Clifford time, you know, everybody feels like Sean Clifford, you know, most of the time is going to make the right decision. So I think, you know, you want to give your quarterback protection. If you're the receiving group, you know, you want to be able to say that you're kind of getting that monkey off your back with the drops. You know, I'm sure that Justin Shorter wants to go out there and have a better sophomore season. I think KJ Hamler is a guy that wants to go out and prove that he's more than a play guy, that he can be an every down receiver from the standpoint of, I'll get you 5 yards and 15 yards sometimes and 40 yards sometimes. You know, so I think all of those offensive parts, you know, it's just, can it all come together? You know, I think we're under the assumption that Clifford or Levis will be fine in that role, but, you know, we've seen over the years that a quarterback can only be as good as what's around him. I don't think there's any reason to think that there's a huge glaring question mark at any of those positions. But, you know, Penn State's offensive line, when you have some changes, when you've got new guys and new spots up there, you know, that's an area that you've got to keep an eye on. Obviously, the receiving core, again, wants to kind of bounce back from the year they had last year. So I think especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think defensively Brent Pry has proven that he can plug just about anybody in there and be efficient with them. There's no reason to think that side of the ball is going to have issues. So to me, you look at the offensive side of the ball and say, can they be more consistent in every area? Because if they can, you feel like they've got the skill position guys on paper to put points up.
When you look at the young players, now everything's on an individual basis. But how much do you think things have changed where instead of, all right, let's go through it and recruited 25 players, we'll pick that number, Ben. We're going to redshirt 18 of them, maybe play 7.
Yeah, I mean,
everything's changed there. How much has that changed in your mind about the ability to play somebody early? Because guess what? That clock might only be 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, people talked about Justin Shorter in a similar fashion, that, you know, he's going to be a guy that comes in and maybe he's on at Penn State for 3 years. That, you know, maybe he's a guy that plays a lot of football right away. He's a highly recruited guy. He gets the campus. He has a great freshman year. You know, maybe he's gone like Saquon was by the end of his junior year. You look at a guy like, you know, Jason Oway is another guy who's been, you know, everyone's expecting great things out of him. You don't know how long he's going to be around. And Micah Parsons, obviously, is another guy. I think, you know, the college football landscape has always been more freshman-friendly than maybe Penn State has been traditionally, but I think at the same time you see across the country more and more freshmen are playing because more and more of them are physically ready. You look at pictures of You know, what Saquon looked like when he came to Penn State, he was obviously, you know, in great shape and looked like the kind of player that he turned out to be. But you look at him now, you look at him in his junior year, he's a completely different player. And I think one of the biggest things you see when you look at freshman guys that are coming in at Penn State and really across the Big Ten, but certainly the programs that are recruiting at a high level, these guys look ready. They look like, you know, a different sport. But I remember the first time I saw Lamar Stevens. He's a guy that looks like he's Big Ten ready. I think you see a lot of these freshmen come in, and that changes the equation because suddenly, you know, Lawrence Smith, maybe he's ready to play as a freshman. And really, you know, if you're James Franklin, you want to play your best players, and a lot of that has to do with your physical capabilities. And if these freshmen come in and are ready to play physically, obviously there's the mental side, the classwork side, and all the other things that come in with that transition. But college football has become much more friendly to, you know, freshmen playing from day one. And I think how well Penn State's recruited, you know, you want every recruiting class to have some guys saved for down the road. But there's no doubt that, you know, the best programs are the ones that are able to reload. The best ones are the ones that are able to play, you know, top-tier talent from day one as soon as it gets on campus. So I definitely think if you're Penn State, you know, you're looking at your recruiting class. Half of it is guys you're saving, and the rest of them you go, you know, this is not 1994 anymore. We're not waiting 3 years for a guy to hit the field. It might be week two. Maybe you just get those four games in even. But, yeah, definitely freshmen are a much bigger part of the equation than they used to be.
Ben, in your opinion, how comfortable should Penn State fans feel with the depth?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always one of those things that seeing is believing. But I think you compare Penn State's roster right now to where it was, let's say, when James Franklin got here. And the biggest thing that I think, you know, fans that really follow the program understand this, but maybe your casual viewer doesn't, is where the sanctions really hurt Penn State wasn't so much on the field. Obviously, you know, those are areas that it's impacted, but it hurts you in practice. It hurts you when Steven Gonzalez doesn't really have competition behind him on the offensive line because he's just better than the other guys. And now you look at Penn State when they're in practice now, and there's two or three guys at almost every position, you know, that are competing or at least pushing the guys in front of them. And that's huge for development. It's huge for talent. And it's huge because, you know, you have the ability to not play your best players sometimes. You have your ability to save a guy. You know, I wrote about this last week that Michael Mennett, you remember back to the 2016 season,
sure,
when they had some injuries, there was a lot of talk about where are they going to burn his red shirt and play him. And they didn't, and they, you know, they were very tempted to. But you look years down the road now, you know, now he's got more eligibility sort of on the back end of his career rather than burning it at the end of that season. Mm-hmm. And the difference now is, you know, if a guy gets hurt, if Michael Mennett gets hurt, there's guys behind him that are ready to step up, whereas, you know, a few years ago, that depth simply wasn't there, and you could see it almost immediately as those guys got on the field.
Always a pleasure, Ben. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time and rescheduling.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. We'll wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on the show today. Kurt Badenhausen joining us from Forbes. Blair Thomas, Ben Jones, Sean Carey, and once again, no sign of the Biffer. It's been a near perfect show. Oh, did I throw that last part in? I shouldn't have done that.
I saw Biffer as I was grabbing some coffee when I got in here early this morning. That's been it. Must be getting it done. Try to look at this as positive as possible. You have to.
What choice do we have?
That's right. We'll take glass half full instead of half empty.
Right. Well, it's I think that we're going to talk more about the Phillies tomorrow because the trade deadline is 6 days away. You also have camps getting underway. Eagles camp, Steelers camp. Steelers camp, I think, got underway today. So guess what? It's actually stoic and staid. You don't have the Le'Veon Bell drama. You don't have the Antonio Brown drama. Now, does it translate to more wins? We'll find out. This is the year that Cleveland is allegedly moving up. The Ravens are pretty good. I am not in any way, shape, or form sold on the Lamar Jackson-style offense that they're running. This will be, I think, the opening month, the opening 5 weeks of the season for the Ravens will show me something. As I've often said in the show, and I'll say it again here, defensive coordinators don't play 8 rounds of golf in a week in the offseason. They spend a lot of time looking at tape. Last year, when the Ravens made the move from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, they then put in an offense to obviously take advantage of Jackson's great gifts. But it also caught, I think, the rest of the league off guard as to how to defend it and try and do it on a week-by-week basis. The opening month of the season is going to give us an idea of what adjustments defenses have made to how the Ravens want to play. And at some point, Jackson is going to have to adjust back. He's going to have to become a better thrower of the football at some point. So the Steelers will go in with the best quarterback in the division. They will go in with that. Now, in the East, is Carson Wentz the best quarterback in that division? I think, to be honest with you, and I know he's rated the 17th best quarterback by whatever survey it is in the league, but I think Dak Prescott might be the best quarterback in the NFC East. I'm with Booger McFarland on this. Booger McFarland talked extensively yesterday that Dak Prescott's the most underrated quarterback in the league, or disrespected quarterback in the league. And I think in a lot of ways he is. I like Dak Prescott as a quarterback.
As you were talking about Lamar Jackson going from year one to year two, that's the other quarterback I thought of was Dak Prescott. Him going from year one to year two and seeing other teams in the league then catching up as to what Dallas has been doing on offense.
Right, so now he's a little deeper into his career, and he's adjusted along the way. I realize that in saying that I think Dak Prescott might be the best quarterback in the NFC East, you're going to get Eagles fans riled up because of Carson Wentz. Now, does Wentz have the potential to be the best quarterback in the NFC East? Yes, obviously he does. But for Wentz, the problem has been quite simple. He has not been able to negotiate all 16 games in a season. That's why at the moment I would give Prescott the advantage, because Prescott has been able to along the way. So when you go in with somebody that can play the game at that spot, it's a big difference. I mean, Andy Dalton has been good, not great. Thus, the best years for the Bengals have been good, not great. Baker Mayfield has tremendous potential, but he's not Ben Roethlisberger yet. I mean, you look at him at the end of the season in that Ravens game, and we were down in Orlando watching the game at the time. And so here's Cleveland driving. They got a chance to win the darn thing. Now maybe in year five, Baker Mayfield makes a couple of plays and they win the darn thing. But in that game, it showed me he still has a ways to go. What would the Browns go, 7-8-1 last year? Does that sound right?
Yes.
Something like that, yeah. Question is, can they now pass out Pittsburgh and Baltimore?
And they're lining things up. I mean, they got a GM who's a football guy. I mean, that was one of the knocks on Cleveland for a very long time. It's like, upper management just not really the right pieces, to guide that team, to build a team. I mean, they look good on paper now, but you don't play it on paper. But they're playing three primetime games this year? I believe Steelers, Browns, I believe the game in Cleveland will be a Thursday night Fox game this season. So we'll see if it all lines up in their favor.
For example, in the AFC, if I'm going to pick a team in the AFC that I think can dethrone the Patriots, I'm going with the LA Chargers. I mean, that's a talented team, although this is where it begins to be almost comical. And what becomes almost comical is Melvin Gordon. Melvin, right? I'm going to hold out. Over here in the back, why? How many running backs in the league are better than Melvin Gordon? Right? There's a long list.
I think quite a few. Todd Gurley. I could probably, you probably put James Conner in that conversation.
There's a bunch of them. Saquon Barkley's better than he is. Le'Veon Bell's better than he is. James Conner's better than he is. I mean, you just keep going down through the list, for goodness sakes, as the guys who are better running backs than Melvin Gordon is. He's not even the best running back in his own city. Okay? Well, maybe he's the best running back in Carson, California. Hold on a second. Let me amend that. But the value of a running back in the league, C.J. Anderson stepped in last year when Gurley was banged up, and C.J. Anderson was great. I mean, Melvin Gordon is not the greatest pass receiver. He's not the greatest blocker. Obviously, he's got some speed and can get to the outside and can make some things happen, but, man, you got to know who you are. And he does not know who he is. He thinks he's a lot better. Somebody told him he's a lot better than he really is. If I'm sitting there and I have a running back situation, running back issue, and they say you can acquire Melvin Gordon, I'm like, well, all right, well, what are other options? I'm not sitting there wowed by him. I wasn't wowed by him at Wisconsin. I don't care if he had a 400-yard rushing game. He didn't have one game worth anything against Penn State when I saw him. He had one long run on a reverse where they put him in the slot. That's the only significant play he made against Penn State in 2 years. Fun show today. Our thanks to Blair Thomas, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, Kurt Badenhausen, the senior editor of Forbes. You can check it out in the Steve Jones Show podcast. Do not, under any situation, go to biffer.com.
Didn't know there was such a thing. Thanks to everybody that subscribed to the podcast. Got a lot of check-ins last week during Best of Week.
That's great. All right, look forward to tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.